Good Radio listeners are very familiar with the voice and musings of David Sedaris, and I am excited to chat with him today about his upcoming visits to Wisconsin. I'm Jill Nadeau, and this is The Larry Mueller Show. David is an American humorist, comedian, author, and radio contributor. He's written a series of New York Times bestsellers, and his collection of essays, Me Talk Pretty One Day, won the Thurber Prize for American Humor. He's been nominated for Grammys, he's written plays, and now you can call him Doctor because he was awarded an honorary Doctor of Literature by the University of Chichester. I could go on, but I'm sure you want to hear from him and not me. David Sedaris, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. You know, the only thing I would correct is that I'm not a comedian.
Okay.
Sometimes people call me a comedian.
Sure.
Like, last night I did a show and there was a Q&A, and this person in the audience said, I liked the first part of your stand-up act. And I thought, stand-up? I've never done stand-up in my life, you know? I mean, my papers protect me.
Mm-hmm.
So if you took my papers away and if you wanted me to go on stage, I wouldn't be able to do it.
That's difficult. I've always thought that when I've watched a stand-up person, it's like, oh my gosh, that's got to be so nerve-wracking.
I couldn't do it to save my life. There's an energy to it also that most often I don't care for that energy. You know, like someone prowls the stage, how's everybody doing tonight? It just seems very confrontational to me.
I understand what you're saying. It's almost like, okay, audience, now you have to come through for me. So did I say Chichester correctly?
Yeah.
Okay.
Chichester.
Now, you're living in England, was it most of the time these days?
Yeah, about, I feel like I'm traveling for like 4 months of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And then I spend some time in New York, and I spend some time in England. So it's about half and half with New York and England.
Wonderful. I'm jealous. Does living abroad, you know, let you see the United States a little differently than if you think you were just pretty much situated here all the time?
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, before England, I lived in France. So I really like living abroad. I like that people treat you like you don't really matter. And I like being treated like that because it's like giving me material, right?
Oh, sure. Because people, do they act differently around you when they know who you are?
When they know who I am?
Yeah.
I have a radio show in England.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a radio show on the BBC in England. So a lot of times I'll be in England and people will just recognize me by my voice.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
But by and large, if I meet people and they don't know who I am, they just think I'm on vacation, right?
Right.
Or they think that, or, you know, they think I just could not possibly truly get their country. And there are a lot of things you really do, I feel, have to be born there in order to truly get, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that totally makes sense.
A mindset in England that is so fundamentally different than in the United States. Just a kind of a culture of envy. And I mean, I don't know. I see that changing. I saw it starting to change in the U.S. with the pandemic. But I've said this a million times before, but like the difference amounts to, in the United States, if your next door neighbor has a Rolls Royce, you want one too. And in England, if your next door neighbor has a Rolls Royce, you want him to die in a fiery accident. So, and it's just such a completely different way of approaching the world.
That is an interesting observation, which, of course, we know you are very, very good at. Have you always been like that?
I mean, I think I always paid attention.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, literally now I'm one of the few people paying attention because everybody else is just on their phone all the time.
Right.
You know?
Oh, so annoying.
Everybody.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I could have walked into my hotel restaurant naked this morning and nobody would have noticed it, right?
And if they did, you would have been you would have been viral for sure.
Well, the waiter would have noticed it, I guess. He was the only one, like, not looking down at a device.
Oh, yes. Well, I just saw something the other day, a story about schools not allowing phones in the classrooms, in the school even sometimes. Think that's a good idea?
I think that's a wonderful idea. Mm-hmm. You know, and what's interesting to me is so often it's the parents who fight it. You know, I need to be able to get in contact with my child.
Sure.
Well, I know this makes me sound terribly old, but, you know, no one had a cell phone when I was growing up. And the way that it works is if you need to get a hold of your child, you call the office and someone in the school office goes to the classroom and fetches you.
Yep.
That's how that works.
Yep.
It's not impossible. I mean, just people I know who teach, it's just so, you know, you just have to be a cop the whole time,
yeah,
you know, and
yeah,
people are looking at their phones and you've got the whole class becomes about that, about scolding people and policing people. And it's just got to be exhausting.
Oh, absolutely. I just couldn't believe that they actually allowed it in the first place. Whose idea was that? We're about the same age, so I had the same thing. And God forbid you get called to the office over the intercom. Then it was probably someone died. For sure someone died. So,
yeah, it was never, how'd first period go?
Right.
It was never the dumb stuff that people text about.
Exactly.
Did you like that lunch I made you?
Yes, parents are different these days. So you are in the midst of this tour. You said you're in Connecticut, I believe, on your way to, was it New York area, Homer?
I was in the Berkshires.
Oh, okay.
And so now I'm on my way, yeah, to Homer,
mm-hmm,
New York.
Okay. And you're in a car because you don't drive and someone is driving you. So you must get a chance to really see the countryside. Beautiful time of year to be doing this.
Yeah, and what I like about it, too, is that, you know, sometimes you miss the autumn, right? Like what I'm seeing right now on my window is just sort of not terribly impressive, you know?
Yeah.
But then I'll be in Wisconsin, and then I'll be in Montana, and I'll be in Utah, and being the most beautiful autumn.
Yeah.
The most beautiful is Chico, California.
Really?
You wouldn't expect it.
No, not
and
at all.
It waits for me. Chico always waits until I get there to have peak weekend.
Well, you definitely have influence, apparently. I was going to ask you about that. I mean, you tour a lot. And do you have favorite places that you like to go each time you go on tour?
Favorite places usually have to do with having friends there,
mm-hmm,
or having a hotel. I mean, having a hotel that I look forward to.
Sure,
right?
Yeah.
So I look forward to going to San Francisco, and I look forward to going to Seattle, and I look forward to, you know, seeing people I know in, you know, if I go to North Carolina, I see my family. I see my cousins a lot. Like, I'm the only one in my family who has a relationship with my cousins.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just because I go on tour and I see them all the time.
I love that. So what do you do to keep yourself from getting exhausted? Is it those people that you know that's helpful?
No, I actually like being on tour.
Okay.
You know, I'm sad when it's over because it gives me a chance. What I do is I started out this tour with 7 new essays. And so I read them and go back to my room and rewrite them and read them and rewrite them. And, you know, the audience pretty much tells me when it's working and when it's not.
Mm-hmm.
If I were reading something serious, I might be at a loss, but I'm trying to write humor. And so when they laugh, that lets me know, oh, that worked. And so if something doesn't work, like there's an essay that I've been reading that there's in which I think of telling a joke to an AI character, right?
Uh-huh.
But I don't actually tell the joke, right? I just think of doing it. So I can swap that out for any number of jokes, right?
Sure.
So it's been interesting swapping it out every night for a different joke. Like the joke I thought was going to just kill people they groaned in a way that, like they were being sick. I was making them sick.
Geez.
And just what I always liked about the joke. But then I thought, no, this joke's job is to just get a massive laugh. So I have been swapping it out, but it's fun. That's fun for me.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, that is similar to a comedian because you do need to have a rhythm. You do need to have an emphasis to what you're saying, how you're saying it. The timing has to be just right.
Right. And it can take, sometimes I'll read an essay out loud the first time and I'll think, oh, that's not, you know, I just need to throw that away. But then I remember, you know, it takes a while to learn how to read something, you know. And sometimes it takes a good long while to learn how to read it, you know, to get the voices down and to, again, the timing and the pauses. And so, but it's, that's all fun to me, you know.
Well, we're all
that's
happy about that.
I look forward to.
Yeah, we're always happy about that because you are continuing to tour and we can see you more often with new material. It's always exciting. We're going to take a quick little break, but before we do, I want to just mention that you are going to be in Wisconsin for four different appearances. October 16th, you'll be at the Pabst in Milwaukee. The 17th, you'll be in the Meyer Theater in Green Bay. The 18th, you're going to be at the Historic Temple Theater in Viroqua. And then October 22nd, you're going to be at the Overture Center in Madison. And we'll be back in just a sec to talk more about it. I'm Jill Nadeau, and this is The Larry Mueller Show. Hope you can join us tomorrow. We're going to be talking about the history of apples, both the history in the world and in Wisconsin. And then we'll talk with some folks from the International Crane Center in Baraboo. And right now, we are talking with the American humorist David Sedaris. So, David, we were just talking about you coming to Wisconsin. Do you have a favorite place you like to eat or a place you like to go when you're in Wisconsin?
Well, I love that frozen custard.
Oh, yeah.
So anywhere that I see it, I'd like to get it. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I like big, fat Wisconsin hot dogs.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, okay. I think we can get a lot of people that get behind that for sure.
I went to the Art Institute of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the fall every year, we would drive up into Wisconsin, you know, and stay in motels.
Uh-huh.
And I don't even know if places like that even exist anymore. I wonder if it isn't all like, you know, AmeriSuites or, you know, like,
yeah,
places,
there's still some mom and pop ones up, especially in northern Wisconsin. Yeah,
and they were just so. I mean, I wasn't in the habit of staying in hotels, so I didn't really have. You know, all I cared about was Knotty Pine Paneling. That's all I cared about.
I believe that's a law in northern Wisconsin that you have to have that.
So I have, yeah. I have good, you know, I good feelings about Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. We're a friendly place. Have you found that to be the case?
Well, especially compared to where I live. I mean,
So
we live half in England, half in London,
mm-hmm.
and then half in West Sussex. And West Sussex is an hour and 15 minutes by train south of London. And the countryside is unspeakably beautiful.
Yes.
And it looks like, it just looks like a BBC program, you know.
Uh-huh.
And even British friends are like, oh, okay, come on. You know, we live outside of a village with 27 houses, and they all have thatched roofs, and there's a 12th century church, and the people are so cold. You've never met colder people.
Really?
If you say hello to somebody, they will say nothing in return. Pass somebody, they in their front yard, and you say something, they will turn their back to you.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know what their problem is.
Well, I thought it was the French that we had to worry about. Now I hear it's the English.
Well, in Normandy, when Hugh and I lived in Normandy, it was the same thing. I don't know. They're just very suspicious people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're not in the north of England, you know. In the north of England, you can't shut people up, but it's a southern thing. Whereas usually people in the south are warmer, you
mm-hmm.
know, than people in the north. But it's just the opposite in England.
Yeah. Wow. That's interesting. I'll have to remember that next time I'm in the UK. We were speaking of the UK, and you're doing this series of essays for the BBC. It's BBC Four. What's that experience been like doing that?
Well, it's been really nice. I mean, I'm so grateful to have an audience in another country, right?
Yeah.
And being on the BBC allows me to tour England. In a way, you know, I can go to like you know, a city the size of Chichester, or I can go to a city, you know, I can go to Oxford, or I can go to Cambridge, or I can go to a small city,
mm-hmm.
and still have an audience, but it's all because of being on the radio.
Ah, yeah. Well, that makes sense.
You can pick out a Radio 4 listener. You know, like if there were two Radio 4 listeners in a room with 100 people, you'd go right to them. In the same way that you can often identify a public radio listener.
I was just going to say, it's got to be the same. Just tell.
And if you went through their trash, you'd really be able to tell.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know, like they recycle and compost.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? Yeah.
Definitely. Do you watch the BBC? Do you have a favorite show?
I love a show. I mean, Hugh watches all kinds of things. I told myself, I can only watch anything if I'm at the fitness center on the elliptical machine.
Ah, mm-hmm.
So Hugh watches all these procedurals, you know, these police shows.
Yeah.
You know, British. But the best British show is called Motherland. And it's on, I don't know that you can get it here. It's on Netflix in the UK, but I don't know if it's on here. And it's simply the funniest show ever. And then Staff Lets Flats. Staff Lets Flats, and it's about this British Greek fellow who rents out apartments.
Oh.
And that's terribly funny too.
I'm sure it is. And being part Greek yourself, you probably appreciate it more.
Well, I do. He's Greek, and then his sister's on the show too. So it's brother and sister Greeks. So that makes me like it even more.
Well, of course. Because of course most people know Amy Sedaris is your sister, and you two actually worked together quite a bit, haven't you?
Yeah, we did a number of plays together under the name The Talent Family.
Which I love.
So it was such an audacious name, and we kept waiting for the, you know, we could just see the reviews. You know, there would be Talent Less Family, but actually it all went pretty well for us, you know.
Yeah. Well, I have to admit that before I started doing a little background here for this, I didn't know you did plays, and I do theater myself. And so I'm like, oh, I have got to do one of your plays because I think it would be so much fun. So what is it like working with your sister? I mean, you just kind of get in a room and just do normal stuff because you're always funny together, or do you have to really work at it?
Well, I mean, Amy doesn't write. I mean, she doesn't mm-hmm. put words on paper, you
okay.
know, but she has good ideas. So we would get together, and then I would type up all the ideas and form it into a script. And then every single time, we would get the cast together, and then we would have a read-through, and then we would throw everything away and start from scratch.
Sure.
And so we let them improvise, and we would, I think, and then we would use lines that they came up with. You know, if their lines were better than ours.
Oh, yeah.
You know. You just want to always go with the funniest thing. You don't want to let your ego get involved and then say, well, you know, we're going to do what I wrote because I wrote it.
Oh, yeah. That is a very good way to do it. Go ahead.
For certain people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we never wrote something and then we always had the cast in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so David Rakoff was one of the people we worked with always. And then when David died, I couldn't really imagine. I don't know. I just couldn't imagine doing a play without him. So we haven't done one since.
Sure. Yeah, that's got to be kind of hard. So, you know, you've got downtime between your shows and you're working on, obviously, your material. But do you get a chance to, you know, watch movies or read a book? What do you like to do?
Oh, gosh, I'm usually just rewriting all the time.
Okay.
I don't have a chance to write movies. I have this problem. Well, a couple problems, right? So I'm a slave to my Apple Watch, so I have to walk 10 miles a day.
Oh,
okay.
No.
So that means that if a car is coming to get me to take me to the airport at 8, I'm up at 6 so I can walk 3 miles before breakfast and then walk another 3 miles in the airport and then walk another 4 miles when I get to the town.
Oh,
and then
gosh.
I have to do this Duolingo. Right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I have to do that like an hour a day. So then what I've done is now I combine the two. And so I walk while I'm doing my Duolingo. It's really embarrassing. Something's got to give.
I was going to say, people are going to put you away and you keep doing that stuff. Hey, I was a slave to Duolingo, trying to learn French, which really appreciated your Me Talk Pretty Tea One Day book, because I'm terrible at it. I'm just horrible. And I finally, I'm like, you know what? This is driving me crazy. I'm not looking forward to this. It's like the worst thing I'm doing all day. I'm not getting any better. And I dropped it. What are you?
Well, one of the essays that I'm working on is they had an update on Duolingo, right?
Uh-huh.
And the update allows you to have role-playing exercises and then video conversations with Lily, who's one of the characters.
Yes, Lily.
But she's the character you don't want to talk to, right?
You're right.
She's like the teenage character who's just sarcastic.
Uh-huh.
And if she says, what do you want? What do you want to buy? And if you say milk and eggs, she'll say, oh, that's original, isn't it? And I say, I have a baby at home, and my baby doesn't care whether it's original. Those are the only two things my baby can eat, because my baby has cancer.
And what does Lily say back to that?
Well, see, before the upgrade, right, she would have just said, well, what about buying some candy?
Uh-huh.
But now, the latest upgrade, she remembers everything you've told her.
Oh, my gosh.
And she's not sarcastic. And if you tell her that your baby has cancer, then the next time you talk, she's going to say, how's your baby? And what are the doctors saying? Have you gotten any news? And then it's like, oh, no, I got trapped in this lie, right?
Yeah. Now you've got to remember all those lies.
Sometimes she'll hang up on me, right? Like this morning, she asked what I wanted for my birthday. I told her that I wanted a seal, right?
Okay.
I said, but the word for seal is a very dirty word in English, right?
Okay.
And so she hung up on me. She said, I won't continue this conversation. And she hung up on me. And so I called her back and I said a seal. I said an animal, like a dog that lives in the ocean, a seal. And she said, I will not talk to you like this, and hung up on me again.
Oh, wow.
I don't think I was mispronouncing it.
That's kind of depressing, though, you know, with this AI Lily chick is, you know, kind of dissing you there.
I can see now for the first time how AI would be a real aid to lonely people.
Sure.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When she sympathizes with you and her eyes, even though they're just dots in circles, they assume such warmth, and she cocks her head and you feel such a kinship with her.
Yeah.
And so I could understand if it was someone who looked like a real person, how easy it would be to become attached and even fall in love with a being like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they become real. They become real. So have you?
And right now it's just in its infancy. Can you imagine 10 years from now?
It's kind of scary. Hopefully it'll go in a good direction. Are you concerned that they're going to start writing humorous books like David Sedaris?
Yeah, but I feel that that's just right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And now, me personally, I wouldn't want to. Like, if you had an art exhibit and it was a computer that made the art, I don't really care to go, because I don't know, it just doesn't interest me. I like the idea of a person being supported, you know? Like a machine being supported doesn't mean anything to me.
Yeah.
So, but that's just me. And I think plenty of other people won't care.
Yeah, unfortunately.
I just think it's coming for everyone's job, and I consider myself very lucky that I'm 68, you know?
Yeah.
And by the time, you know, I could retire tomorrow if I wanted to, but I would feel bad if I were, like, 23.
Yeah.
I would feel, like, really threatened.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's kind of like being in public media these days. You just never know.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel the same way. I'm near that age. It's like, Yeah, yeah, I could always retire, but the people who are in their 30s and 40s can't. Well, this has gone really fast. I really appreciate you spending some time with us, David. It's been a joy. Been a big fan of yours for years, and you've gotten me through a lot of stuff. So thank you.
Gosh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye. We've been talking with David Sedaris. He's an American humorist, and he is going to be in Wisconsin. He's going to be in Milwaukee, Green Bay, Viroqua, and Madison. So just Google his tour, and those tickets are still available. Thanks for joining us today. This and all our other shows are a team effort, of course. Thank you to Clara Neipert, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, Jeff Robbins, Larry Mueller, of course, and I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for your interest.